critically analyzing national affairs. This is State of the Nation with Timothy Shea and Brian McClain on today's News Talk. TNT.
All right, hour two of State of the Nation. Here we go. I'm Brian McClain out of Central Texas. I want to thank you for joining us for this May the 15th edition of State of the Nation. We are live here with today's News Talk. I'm here with Timothy Shea out of Central New York. Timothy, that was a banger first hour, and I'm looking forward to jumping into the second one with you.
Went by fast. This one's going to go by even faster.
Absolutely. So this one is interesting. Out of SlayNews.com, CDC faked 99% of reported COVID deaths. Data shows. So the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention has just quietly published new data that reveals a staggering 99% of reported COVID deaths were not actually caused by the virus. Recent data from the CDC reveals a troubling statistic that most recorded fatalities were blanket blamed on COVID were actually caused by something else. According to their COVID dashboard, just 1.7% of the 324 COVID deaths registered in the week ending in August 19 had coronavirus as the primary cause of death. Are we surprised at all?
Not in the least. I got 5 30-day bans for reporting the truth during those 2 years, 2020, 2021. Finally got nuked last year in 2023. Permanently off of Facebook and Instagram. We knew this all along. It was the ventilators in New York that were killing people. It was our governor putting sick people into nursing homes that killed 15,000 elderly here. And it was people dying from kidney failure and total organ failure, remdesivir. I had one friend in South Dakota whose parents were both murdered within 30 days of each other. And my partner in MAGA Institute, Brooke McGowan, they murdered her father the same exact way.
Yeah, I think we all have a lot of stories that way. And some of us maybe need to read this article and understand that that actually is the story because a lot of people still aren't quite getting it. Now, let me shift across the pond, actually. Let's take a look at King Charles's new portrait. Go ahead and roll it, studio. Wow, that is absolutely freaky. It does not look very royal to me. First off, it looks like a heavy metal album cover. My goodness, look at that. I feel like I could be, I'm almost hearing, I think I hear the faint sound of Slayer ripping away at Rain and Blood in the background here as I look at that. And Luke, could you put up that mirrored image real quick? I want to, some savvy person on social media took the image, split it down the middle, and they show the image of what that looks like when you split it down the middle. And I don't know, but it certainly looks like there's some sort of goat lord subtly down the center of that, if you were to mirror it across, you know, both pictures of it. You saw it briefly there at the beginning of the video.
Yeah, you don't even have to split it down the middle. You just double copy it side by side and flip one side of it. Have a mirror image of the whole thing. And, you know, I was on a text thread today, and when somebody posted that double image, and it's very clear, it looks like Baphomet, I immediately replied, dipped back into the lyric archive and said, I see a little silhouette of a man, which led to an entire string of Bohemian Rhapsody lyrics. It was great going back and forth.
Glorious.
Felt like that, I was in the back of a pacer.
The gloriousness of mimetic warfare right there. How much you want to bet that thing is painted with real blood? I wonder whose it is. I know I'm not the only one asking that. Kind of reminds me of Bathory's self-titled album cover or the new Deicide album. I'm not sure.
Actually, it looks like one of the paintings at what was Obama's henchman's name?
Oh, like in the John Podesta collection, you mean?
Podesta, that's it. Yeah, the John Podesta art collection.
Yeah, exactly. Wow. Okay. Well, that was interesting. So that's kind of some sort of fun and creepy stuff to wake up to. I wish the Royals would stop stealing from heavy metal. It just doesn't have a royalty sort of sniff to it. But hey, do you have a suggestion for a possible guest that you'd like to hear on TNT? Or maybe you've got a topic you feel we should discuss? Timothy and I would love to hear from you. Simply complete the suggestion form on the TNT website and help us make a difference on today's News Talk TNT.
Clashing on the controversies.
It's a woke society, and I am fed up with it.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right. Joining us now is America's longest-serving television news director, our friend Steve Cohen. Steve, welcome back to State of the Nation.
Ryan, both. I'm amazed at what you guys cover sometimes. That last thing on Charles was just too much. Too much.
Well,
Because you were able to deal with Charles, the painting, and heavy metal and Queen all at one time. You guys are amazing.
Hey, well, you know, we aim to please. We try to pack in as much as we can. Speaking of, it's really shocking watching the events of the so-called hush money trial, you know, the one to do with Stormy Daniels, who really isn't providing much to the facts of the case, along with Michael Cohen, again, not providing a very good witness for a case with an alleged crime that's outside the statute of limitations. We're very confused by it, but this is our reality. What's your take on the developing situation in New York with Mr. Trump?
Well, I think you have, let's look at it from the media side first. Again, we look at the way most folks have covered it, meaning mainstream media, and you see that the narrative is that Trump is guilty of something, when the reality is, as anybody who's studied juries and jurisprudence would tell you, there's no real case there. There's never been a case there, and there's not going to be a case there. And bringing Stormy Daniels, who had the type of testimony that you just couldn't imagine would ever be in an American courtroom, and then have Michael Cohen, as you know, a convicted felon and a known liar. I don't think I've ever seen that. And, you know, I was one of the creators of Court TV, the original Court TV. I did 150 cases from William Kennedy Smith to Rodney King and O.J. Simpson. So I've been in a lot of courtrooms. I've never seen a presentation of evidence like that by a prosecutor in the history of American jurisprudence. And has media covered it that way? The answer is no. And that's the tragedy of it, that an American president can be brought forward in a courtroom on these bogus charges and basically kept from campaigning. And that's the reason that that's happening in court, we all think.
And then Joe Biden, in a video today, challenging Donald Trump to debates, it took six cuts, right? They had to piece together six different cuts in order to get one 20-second ad out of the poor guy.
You know,
But in
Timothy,
the
it's
end,
great that you knew that. I mean, how did you even know that? I thought that was sort of a piece of esoteria, but it was 14 seconds and it took them like 15 minutes, right? Isn't that what you found out?
yeah, and what they did is they had to cut out the snippets and glue them together. And at the end, he said, "How about Wednesdays? I hear you're free on Wednesdays." You know, he's mocking him. It's like this guy can't even stand up on his own. Steve, as you know, you've been in and out of courtrooms for the last 30 years or more. It's just like giving a lecture, right? You tell people where you're going to take them, you take them there, and then you conclude by telling them where you just took them. So it sinks in three times, right? People need to hear things three times to get it. And that's the way court presentations are. The prosecution, an opening argument, says the evidence will show. We're going to show you this. We're going to show you this. We're going to show you this. And then you do it through testimony and documentary evidence. And then the closing, you say the evidence showed exactly what we told you, what we promised you we were going to show you in the opening. Well, Alvin Bragg can't do that. He doesn't even know what the crime is. He hasn't been cleared to the court even about what the crime charge is. I have no idea what kind of jury instructions he's going to propose because he hasn't even told the judge what the alleged crime is. Just that
Right.
there's a
And
crime.
that's really the classic flaw in this entire case, is that there never was really a pretext for prosecution. and without the pretext for prosecution. There was nothing that was going to happen in that courtroom that really was going to bring them on a pathway, the jurors to a pathway of what you just described, which is the steps towards a conclusion. You have to have the pretext of an actual crime under some sort of statute in order to go forward. And as we know, the feds rejected it. It was rejected by the former DA, right? Yeah. Morgenthau. He rejected it, and it still wound up in the courtroom. Now, you cannot look at that, the facts, and say that this isn't a political agenda to keep Donald Trump from being able to campaign. I just don't see how a reasonable person could look at it that way.
Yeah. And I think most people are starting to see this, because there's nothing there. There is not a there, and it's not even good television. I mean, you wouldn't even, I would guess you wouldn't even be able to make a court TV series out of
But I will say, as a journalist and as someone who's been involved in putting cameras in courts my whole life, there's no reason that cameras shouldn't be in these courtrooms, because the American public should be able to see exactly what we're talking about without having it have to be interpreted for them. And that's another flaw. That judge could have, under New York state law, allowed cameras to be in that courtroom. There was no reason for him not to do that. It is absolutely wrong and shows that there's no backbone in the New York court system. So, you know, it's one of the few places where you can commit a crime on the streets, stab somebody in a subway, hit somebody in like Steve Buscemi in the back of the head as he's walking down the street in Manhattan, and nothing happens to you under D.A. Bragg. Now, that's New York City, for crying out loud.
Yeah, it's become an urban jungle.
Where does that tell us?
Yeah. This case does present, it might seem to be an esoteric point to some people, but it's really not. It presents an interesting ethical dilemma for the two lawyers that are on the jury. Because just because you're a juror doesn't mean you stop being a lawyer. And lawyers swear an oath to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution. And they also are obligated to report any shenanigans to the court. They're officers of the court. So how can they possibly vote to convict Donald Trump of a crime that hasn't been identified, the elements of which are unknown, and the prosecution didn't even address? I think that those two lawyers, if they vote to convict, barring some last minute blockbuster evidence, which we don't see coming over the horizon, I think they could face bar discipline.
I think it's a good point, but I have to say I'm going to be optimistic about where they are in terms of their own ethics and values. You know, we don't know them, but I think as members of the bar, that you're going to believe that they're not going to cast a vote that's going to be against President Trump because of the things we just talked about. Yeah. I want to believe that folks who pass the bar, even in New York State, are going to be honorable and ethical.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, Steve, whenever you're on, I always like to give you an open goal against Fox. And I'm going to just point out the open goal that they don't take. They are not acting as like a court TV. They are not putting constant coverage on what's going on. I mean, it's there, but it's very subtle. If they really supported conservatives, wouldn't they get behind the assumed only conservative candidate that we have?
I think we have to be clear that the Fox that we used to know, which is the Fox of Rupert Murdoch Sr. and Roger Ailes, who's passed on, that isn't the Fox we have anymore. The Fox we have now is really as oriented towards audience doing what they think is going to bring people to them. And also that sort of, frivolous sarcasm that has taken over Fox prime time, except for Brett Baer, of course. And I think that's problematic. So I don't think you can go to Fox and think that Fox is the mainstay. I think there are other outlets like yours, Newsmax, certainly Newsmax 1 and 2, that have some other value system that they're portraying and playing it straighter. And I don't mean slanted right. I mean straighter, which is to say, this is what's really happening. This is what's going on, and we're going to play honest brokers. The problem is that if you're an honest broker today in American media, you're targeted as being right wing. That's unfortunate.
Who, what, where, when, why, baby?
Yeah.
Exactly, yeah, right, Timothy.
Very yeah. unfortunate. Yeah, that's all we want. You know, we just want some unbiased reporting. And clearly the mass media cartel is not the place we're going to get that. And that is why we're so pleased to always have you join us here at State of the Nation and help us in that endeavor. Mr. Steve Cohen, thank you so much. I want to make sure that you go out and get yourself a copy of 50 Years in a Newsroom, a eulogy, if you want to know more. Steve is the man that will help you understand the media environment that we now live in and how it went from what it was to where it is now. So, Steve, thank you so much.
Thank you both.
All right. This is State of the Nation on today's News Talk. Hang with us. This is TNT.
TNT's David Curtin.
If this thing gets passed by the 194 members of the World Health Organization, it's going to bring in the power for them to declare an emergency and enforce lockdowns on all of their members, coerced injections, which goes against bodily autonomy, removal of people from their homes, imprisonment in quarantine camps for your safety, of course, and travel restrictions with vaccine passports, more draconian than we saw in the first lockdown, along with digital identities where you will have to prove your vaccination status and probably whether or not you've said anything which they declare to be misinformation.
David Curtin on today's News Talk, TNT. TNT is an independent global news talk station that does what others only say they do. TNT is a live radio and TV broadcaster that simply tells the truth 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. No one in the world does what we do, crisscrossing the globe, providing credible news and opinion all day and all night. In 2.5 years, TNT has become a credible and exciting platform with brilliant hosts and staff. It's a critical time, and we must continue to call out the misinformation and propaganda from mainstream media and their powerful sponsors. We're now appealing to our many friends and supporters around the world to go to tntradio.live and make a small donation to TNT while we seek the right investors to continue our important mission. Without CO2, the world stops breathing. CO2 sustains all life on Earth. Government, the WEF, and the elite believe humans are the carbon they really want to be rid of. Today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Is Peace Officers Memorial Day honoring all of those who died on the job? Being a law enforcement officer has never been easy, but you'd be hard-pressed to find a worse time to be a cop. Even back in the 1960s, you didn't have woke DAs funded by a foreign-born adversary who's trying to destroy our country, prosecuting political opponents, and freeing violent felons. Things are so bad for police in Denver that the Laramie County, Wyoming Sheriff's Office has erected a recruiting billboard in the Mile High City that reads, "Work in Wyoming, where breaking the law is still illegal, and cops are fully funded." And joining us now to discuss this and other public safety issues is the founder of The Wounded Blue, Randy Sutton. You can follow him on X at LT Randy Sutton. Randy, welcome back to State of the Nation.
It's always a pleasure to be with you guys.
So have you seen that billboard in downtown Denver?
I sure did, and I laughed. And the what's funny is the city of Denver and their woke, political leadership is trying to downplay, and they're saying, "Oh, this Denver's a great place to work." No, it's not. No, it's not. And by the way, it's very that recruiting poster or billboard has been very effective. They've actually gotten like 40 recruits out of it.
Exactly. And here's a little backstory that you're going to hear on State of the Nation and nowhere else. Literally nowhere else. That billboard was the brainchild of my good friend of the show, Nebraska State Senator Brian Hardin, who's been working closely with law enforcement, both federal, state, and local in Wyoming, regarding infiltration of Chinese nationals threatening our power grids. And he suggested it to the Laramie County Sheriff.
I love it. I love it. I laugh. Well, you know who else has done similar things? The state of Florida. They went to New York and recruited heavily in New York, and for very good reason, and they were very effective as well.
National Police Week going. We know you're on site out there in Washington, D.C. I was looking at sort of the event and scheduled things going on at the event. I noticed you had National Police Canine Memorial Service, Police Unity Tour, a whole arrival ceremony, some annual candlelight vigils. I mean, what's the energy like out there?
Well, the energy is let me put it this way. There's a lot of emotion here in Washington, D.C. this week because 30 to 40,000 police officers are here. And the families of the fallen are here. What happens at National Police Week is there is a memorial in downtown Washington, D.C. that has the names of every single police officer killed in the line of duty during the entire history of our nation. Well, every year during this week, the names of the officers who lost their lives in the line of duty last year are revealed. They are carved in the granite, and they are revealed for the first time. Also, their names are read at the National Mall, where 20,000 police officers in uniform raise their candles in honor of those men and women as their names are read. And the families of these officers, I was there with them today at the memorial itself. The rain was coming down. And the somber faces and the families actually, you know, looking at the name of their loved one, touching that name, taking a pencil and a piece of paper scratching the name on that paper. It's so emotional here. You see a child placing a teddy bear by their father's name. I mean, it's beautiful, it's painful, it's real. And I've been coming here for more than 30 years, and I got to tell you, every year it still packs the emotional punch from the first time.
Yeah, I imagine it really does. Let me read you this, actually. This is from, who wrote this? This is Terrence P. Dwyer at police1.com. He writes, T.S. Eliot's epic poem, The Wasteland, begins with the line, quote, April is the cruelest month, end quote. And that is how this season has been so far. Over 4 days in upstate New York, two police officers were shot and killed in the line of duty in Syracuse, and an Albany police officer was ambushed and shot during a traffic stop. While the country was caught up with NCAA March Madness, a Western New York sheriff's deputy died after a felonious assault, an NYPD officer was shot and killed, and a state police investigator was seriously injured when run down while attempting to make an arrest. During the same time frame, police officers were either shot and killed or wounded by gunfire in other parts of the country. The opening section of The Wasteland, eerily titled The Burial of the Dead, speaks of disillusionment and despair. Yet that is not how we should end this month, nor is it a way to honor the fallen as we move forward. And he goes on to talk about National Police Week and its importance, but I just thought that was really well written.
Very poignant.
It is, and it really does. It tells of the emotion. We minister to people here. I have an entire team from the Wounded Blue here in Washington because there is so much pain. And with that trauma, unfortunately, also comes post-traumatic stress.
Randy, we've got an inbound headline. Let's talk about the Wounded Blue and all the great work that you're doing with them. Right after this, from today's News Talk, TNT.
Now, TNT Radio News.
You are completely obsessed with
breaking news. For TNT, this is James O'Neill.
Ohio Secretary of State Frank LaRose has initiated an expanded effort to purge the state's voter rolls of ineligible voters after a review found 137 voter registrations tied to non-U.S. citizens. French President Emmanuel Macron is committed to providing additional military aid to Ukraine in the coming weeks to bolster support against Russia's battlefield advancements. Around 450,000 Palestinians have evacuated Rafah following Israel's intensified military orders, as per the United Nations Agency for Palestinian Refugees.
Are you enjoying listening to TNT Radio?
Do you think we're doing a good job?
Then please let us know. Why not leave us a like or a positive review or comment on Facebook, Gab, or Getter? Help us get the word out as we cover the biggest topics of our time on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Randy, at DeploymentCigars.com, we have a Blue Line cigar that donates to charities, and we're going to be looking hard at the Wounded Blue. It sounds like the kind of organization we like to support. Why don't you tell people what work the Wounded Blue does and what you're doing down there this week for the families and the fellow officers of those who have fallen?
So the Wounded Blue is the national assistance and support organization for injured and disabled law enforcement officers, a nationwide charity that I founded. Actually, this is the week that we launched 4 years ago. And so we are beginning our fifth anniversary at National Police Week. And during that time period, we've helped more than 13,000 American law enforcement officers. And what's so unique about my organization, guys, is that my entire team is made up of police officers who have been shot, stabbed, beaten, run over, screwed up, and screwed over. And yet they continue to serve. I have officers who have been blinded. I have officers in wheelchairs. I have officers who have faced incredible pain, and yet they continue to serve. And they are saving the lives of their brothers and sisters. So what we do is we provide peer support for injured and disabled officers, whether those injuries are physical or emotional and psychological. And I don't know if you saw the statistic, but it came out a couple days ago. Last year, in 2023, 79,000 law enforcement officers were physically assaulted in the line of duty. That is a dramatic, incredible statistic. Last time, 2021, there was 62,000. So we're seeing a dramatic rise in the attacks of law enforcement officers. And this is all part of the attempted dismantling of the criminal justice system by these district attorneys that you've spoken about politicians that have become the tools of the left when it comes down to trying to dismantle the criminal justice system. But I can tell you this, the men and women of law enforcement who I am here with, there are more than 25,000 cops here. And I got to tell you, their resolve is stoic. They will never give up. They will never give up on their communities. And it's these men and women who are literally putting their lives on the line for their communities. It's not these mealy-mouthed politicians. It's not these woke DAs. It's the men and women who are putting on that badge every single day, and they're putting their lives on the line. And unfortunately, 137 lost their lives in the line of duty last year, and their names are being revealed this week.
And you know, some of those woke DAs that you're talking about, I would wager, are, you know, upstream from the cause of some of these deaths that we're talking about and injuries, not to mention the mass media cartel and the politicians that have pushed the three things that that Mr. Dwyer pointed out in that article over at Police One. He says the three threats facing police are the country's incivility and entitlement culture, a failed criminal justice set of reforms, and a mental health crisis.
Well, I would say that's accurate, but there's more to it than that. It's the dehumanization of the American law enforcement officer that is permeated. It is the entitlement, which is absolutely true, but it's the lack of consequences for actions that have been put into place by the political leadership in many, many states, cities, and the nation itself. Now, here's, you know, so prior to Biden being in office, every police week, the president of the United States would be the featured speaker. Not under Biden, of course. And I was there when Donald Trump spoke. I was there when the presidents spoke. And I got to tell you, it was a symbol of respect. The fact that Biden doesn't even show up, well, that says a lot right there. And who does he send in his place? Mayorkas, yeah. and the useless attorney general. They're the ones that are addressing the police. And I got to tell you, there isn't one cop down here that respects that. They all see it as a joke.
He basically gave a big double middle finger to law enforcement. But look, Randy, cops aren't stupid, right? They turned their back on Eric Adams in New York City, which was just beautiful. They kicked Kathy Hochul out of a funeral, which was delicious. They're not having it anymore. And I don't blame them. One of the things, if you want your police to enforce the law, you got to have their back. And these politicians don't. And they're learning. They fooled around and now they're finding out that the boys and girls in blue aren't going to be there when they're needed. And what I love is when all these precious little darlings are victims of crime. And what's the first thing they do? They call for more police. You know, you just can't make this stuff up.
No, you're 100% right. But, you know, during a week like this, there's a lot of reflection that takes place. There's a lot of honor that is here. The honoring of the memories of these men and women. Their photographs are on the wall. They're mementos of their that their families are leaving. It's very dramatic. It's sad. It's beautiful. It's poignant. I wouldn't miss Police Week for anything. And every cop in America needs to come here to really get in touch with the real reason that we are so tight is because we need to support the families of those who have made these sacrifices. Now,
we're going to have to leave it there. It sounds like a great school trip. Quickly, is President Trump scheduled to visit this week during Police Week?
I can't imagine he's going to be able to get away from what he's doing. Police Week actually ends tomorrow. So,
okay.
But if people want to know more, go to thewoundedblue.org. Go to thewoundedblue.org, see who we are, see what we do, and hit that donate button because we are a charity. And we count on the people of America supporting us.
Absolutely. Thewoundedblue.org and on X at LT, Randy Sutton. Randy, can't thank you enough. Look forward to having you back right here on State of the Nation.
While serving in Afghanistan, I was hit by sniper fire. The fighting was so intense, the medevac chopper was barely able to land. In the hospital, I was given a 5% chance to live. It's a good thing math wasn't my best subject. Today, I visit classrooms and share my story. I talk to kids about dealing with life's struggles. I tell them, with a little help and a lot of work, that you can overcome any challenge.
DAV helps veterans like Adam get the benefits they've earned. They help more than 1 million veterans every year in life-changing ways.
I know that some struggles are big and some are small, but they're all struggles, and you have to learn to get through them. With support from DAV, more veterans like me can live their best life. And as a new father, I have one more reason to keep on keeping on. My victory is being there for the next generation.
Adam Alexander, may your victories inspire many more. Support more victories for veterans. Go to DAV.org.
Hi, I'm Susan Lucci. I never thought about heart disease until I had my own heart event. I had a 90% blockage in my main artery and a 75% blockage in the adjacent artery. I received 2 stents in my arteries. Stents developed through research funded by the American Heart Association. Those stents saved my life. Learn more about the American Heart Association's life-saving work at helpheart.org.
The conversation continues with State of the Nation's Brian McClain and Timothy Shea on today's News Talk TNT.
Gavin Newsom, the gruesome nuisance, has his budget proposal in for 2024/2025. It is a $27.6 billion budget, and it proposes a lot of cuts, approximately 18 billion cuts. Some say these cuts will destroy many services and push people into homelessness, but let's not forget that Newsom was the mayor of San Francisco before he became the longstanding governor of California. So let's first take a look back at what he said about homelessness in San Francisco back in 2008. Go ahead and hit that clip, studio.
In this section, I wanted to talk about poverty, particularly poverty in relationship to the issue of homelessness. Look, in San Francisco, I recognize probably the most visible, vexing issue that defines so much of people's frustration and angst, that defines the best of San Francisco and arguably at times the worst, is the issue of homelessness and panhandling. People come in and visit the city, and inevitably they say, it's a beautiful city. My gosh, what are you doing about the issue of panhandling and homelessness? And sometimes they interchange the two, which is something I want to talk about, because panhandling is not homelessness. Homelessness is not panhandling. Doesn't mean they're not at times one and the same, but more often than not, panhandlers are not homeless, and we need to address the issue differently. But the bottom line in our city is that we've moved in a different direction. We believe fundamentally that food solves hunger, that shelters solve sleep, and that housing solves homelessness. And if we're going to solve the problem of those that are out on the streets that we define as homeless, we better solve the housing problem if we're going to have an impact. And that's why we established this framework, what we call a 10-year plan to end chronic homelessness in San Francisco. Now, a lot of people across this country have adopted similar plans, but we're very proud of our plan, the robust nature of the plan, and the leadership of Angela Alioto and others on our plan that we think have done an outstanding job in a very short period of time. And let me be specific about what that job has entailed. To date, some
All right. Joining us now is Mike Netter from RebuildCalifornia.com. Mike, all those words back in 08 seem a little bit empty now, don't they?
Well, that's kind of an understatement. No matter how you look at the glass, look, fascinating, isn't it? I'm glad your producer, Kim, picked that clip, because nobody really ever calls Gavin on these announcements that he makes and saying, oh, how would it turn out? And I don't have the time on this segment today to go around through the long list of press conferences Gavin has had where it hasn't worked out well. San Francisco, you would think if people were alert, well, what's my point? That just what he's done in San Francisco would disqualify him from, frankly, even being allowed to reside in the state of California. Gavin Newsom, with what he has not accomplished in just the last 6 years, it's actually amazing. It's amazing even that the public would consider any portion of them, a single person, that he's presidential material. And Brian, I want to start off with some of the fine work that Gavin has done since he came into office. Let's take a step back, okay? When Jerry Brown left office, the state budget was about $199 billion with a B, dollars per year. Last year, in just 6 short years, Gavin and his cronies managed to run that budget up to $310 billion. Pretty good work in 6 years for not accomplishing anything except losing a lot of money. The San Francisco program that he talked about, he did indeed take it statewide, where homelessness has gone up about 35% since Gavin took office. But wait, there's more. He spent $24 billion the last 5 years, and nobody knows where it's went. Yes, you're not hearing it. You're hearing correctly. We spent $24 billion for a problem which has gotten worse, and we have no idea where the money went.
Yeah, we all need to be contractors for the state of California or for the Defense Department. They lose trillions when not knowing where it goes. isn't there a state auditor in California? I mean, it's just, it's unbelievable. But Mike, you put your finger right on it. You don't know why people still listen to him. I don't know why people listen to any government official, right? Every single economic number the Biden administration touts is recalculated and recentered 3 months later. And now 3 years later, they come out and they say, oh yeah, all those people that died, only 1% of the people, 1.7% of the people that we said died of COVID actually died of COVID, which we knew all along. These people lie like it's their job, Mike.
Well, they've gone beyond lying to simply saying, we're not going to tell you. When you talk about the state auditor's office, we have a state treasurer called Betty, whose response basically at the comptroller, I'm sorry, she's the comptroller in the state. There are different positions who, when we've asked for fiscal records, her reply was very complicated. We don't have them. Yes, indeed. The computer systems of California are so outdated, they haven't produced it. Now, once the auditor's office or the legislative analyst office looked into it, they found they really don't know where the money went. But let's go back to the current budget, if you can, because as we know, Gavin got in, well, about $80 billion last year from Uncle Sam, literally the federal government. They spent it frivolously, like it was one of those shows where they had to spend it in 30 minutes. And this year it came in that they were incredibly short on the budget. Now, I want to hit three incredible key points here for everybody out there. The California budget, Gavin tried to solve with Whiteout, is probably short about $50 billion this year, give or take, because nobody's quite sure because we're not taking in the money. So Gavin, knowing this, did, of course, Timothy and Brian, what any good politician would do. He extended $7 billion a year in free health care to illegal citizens. Okay, which made absolutely no sense. We simply can't afford it. And a couple of interesting budget tricks that he's pulled this last week. And let's be clear, no one's seen the final budget. Only a 90-page synopsis or nine-page synopsis has been issued so far. It was supposed to come out today, Wednesday, but Gavin is at the Vatican because who'd want to stay around the state that you have to be governor of? And so that won't be a come out until Friday. Now, a couple tricks that Gavin is doing, I just want to get across the ludicrousy of it. He eliminated 10,000 California positions for savings of about $1 billion that have not been filled. Yes, you heard correctly. A state employs 243,000 or so people. They have 10,000 open positions, because to your point, we need more government workers at all time to keep the unemployment rate on. And so we're not filling the unfilled positions. That's not a savings. Now, for all employees that have their rent due on June 30th, or their mortgage payment, they're going to be late because Gavin is going to pay them on July 1st. He's claiming that is savings of $2.6 billion. It's not. It's simply the paychecks are moved to another year. So $3.64 billion of it, let's round it up amongst the TNT audience, is basically 100% hyperbole smoke.
You know, Mike, we actually have a clip to drive this one home. Go ahead and roll this clip of the gruesome nuisance.
These are difficult decisions.
That was Governor Gavin Newsom Friday making it clear his $288 billion proposed budget comes with some painful recommendations. He's proposing cuts to more than 250 programs across state government, all in his words, to help close a projected $27.6 billion projected shortfall.
None of this is kind of work you enjoy doing, but you got to do it. We have to be responsible. We have to be accountable.
Specifically, he's calling for more than $18 billion in cuts on a variety of fronts, included a slash to some 10,000 vacant state jobs and reductions for programs related to broadband access, water storage, and local and state public health departments.
Is this what I want to do? No. But the alternative, you know, we can eliminate our expansion of healthcare. We can eliminate wages. We can do furloughs. We can do layoffs. We can do a lot of things. I don't want to do those things.
But for those who work at local public health departments, they say the proposed cuts will impact services across the board. Health professionals worry cuts could ultimately hurt efforts to prepare for a future public health emergency.
Detrimental. Again, we're moving backwards.
The bottom line is that if we lose this funding, people will lose their jobs and work will not get done.
In a statement, Democratic Senator Caroline Menjivar of the San Fernando Valley blasted Newsom's budget, writing, "Do not be deceived. These are not just cuts to administrative costs. These draconian cuts have real life and death consequences and will push our most vulnerable children, families, and aging Californians into homelessness and starvation." But her fellow Democrats, including Assembly Speaker Robert Rivas and Assembly Budget Committee Chair Jesse Gabriel, were more optimistic, noting while Newsom is taking $12 billion from the state's reserves, they make clear the state will still have at least half of its rainy day fund left for future years.
Keeping core services intact.
That's Newsom's key message on what he considers some of the positives of this budget proposal, noting it invests in services for public safety, education, and housing and homelessness.
People want, you know, they want to see results.
But Republicans argue Newsom could have avoided this entire situation had he committed to spending less and saving more in previous years.
Look, it's his own fault because they've made all these promises to people, all these things they said they were going to do, and now they're going to have to break those promises.
And lawmakers have until June 15th to review the governor's proposal and pass a fully balanced budget. If they fail to do so, they will not be paid.
Yeah, so, okay, First off, you guys, I realized watching that I misspoke and the lead in there, that was a $26.7 billion deficit inside of his funding. So he's trying to slash jobs. He's trying to cut social public services to make up that money. And I got to tell you, Mike, I don't like the look of the health people that they interviewed in there. That felt out of place to say, oh, but what about the next health emergency? You know, there's so much wrong with that, this whole situation.
Well, I can't believe what I just heard. I can't believe we just heard what we just heard. They literally said it was like James Michael Curley running for Congress from jail in Boston. And he was elected, by the way. Hey, I didn't steal everything, right? Don't worry. Yeah, we stole half of the rainy day fund, but we left the other half to steal down the road.
Okay, stand back for the next 6 minutes we have left, all right? First off, we did have James Gallagher on my show, outraged to get my plug in, the Republican assembly person you saw speaking there last week. You should listen to that because it talks about dysfunctionality of the Democrats, and it's way too long internally in California's legislature to get off here. But let's talk about a couple of things. Way back when Gavin Newsom was elected, talking about accountability and stealing, he promised California, it's been all over the news, that we would have a home czar. For those of you keeping score at home, to answer what I talked about earlier, Timothy, that is a person actually accountable for the huge amount of the budget that he was talking about in that first clip from 2008 that he was going to solve. Now, when the actual Democratic state legislature almost did something right, no, I'm not having a stroke, they almost did something right, they actually put forward legislation with a homeless czar in it. Guess what Gavin did? He vetoed it and he said, I'm the homeless czar here. And how's that working out, California? Well, we've lost $24 billion with zero accountability. But wait, there's more. For those of you that have been wondering about where things have gone, like all the money, we're not exactly sure. Because just as you watch Joe Biden, far more years, and the old people screaming in the Capitol, in the State of the Union address, Gavin is supposed to have a State of the State address. I'm sure most of you enjoyed it this year. Wait, he delayed it? He didn't have one. Yes, indeed. Gavin Newsom never got up, even though he got up there during COVID in an empty Dodger Stadium and bothered to tell the public what the hell is going on. But wait, there's more, as there always is. The reality is this. Gavin Newsom, and you're right, I looked up the figures earlier, and you'll find some of the figures incredibly frightening. I won't go over to them. To how much, you can look it up, by the way, Google or DuckDuckGo or any way that you want. How many people does this state of California employ. And you can find a breakdown by department. What's really scary is if you want to appeal your EDD, or if you want to con the EDD, not like that's ever happened, unemployment for those of you keeping score at home out there, there are about 366 people working. In addition to the county health departments, we have approximately 2,000 people working on waiting for the next virus. And without the next virus, without the next public health crisis, they will get unemployed. And God forbid that that girl taking phone calls, she's exactly the one I want to call if I'm dying, the one in the video, right, would lose her friggin' job because all end would come to California. And wait, there's one more thing. All those employees talk about getting their job cut, they actually got hit with horrible news. You heard this about a week ago, didn't you? It was the most drastic, and the unions are flipping out. This is before the budget was announced that for the first time in almost 3 years, they would have to, a drum roll, please, TNT producers, show up. Yes, indeed, in case you haven't been paying attention, they actually, these 241,000 workers, 200,000 of them have not even been coming into the office. No one knows what they're doing, but sales of peanut butter sandwiches and homebrew coffee have gone up tremendously. May be good for California economy. And they objected tremendously. They go, you expect for $100,000 a year for me to actually go into the office? What if I get a social disease? Now, in all due respect, look at Gavin. He has some kind of social disease. I kind of see their point. But the reality is, this is what we're facing in California. We are paying a huge amount of money to workers. We have no idea what they do. They may have to finally show up because they lost in court. Court actually sided with the fact you need to be present. And we're watching the clock, and I get it. But the reality is this. Gavin Newsom and the budget of California, there's a lot more to come. We have way too many workers. He pumps the economy up by employing more workers and then lying to the public. And yes, they're going to come up with another virus, another disease. If it's not monkeypox, smallpox, it's going to be some kind of pox. And if you want to keep pox from going on you, donate to Rebuild California and certainly follow me at my Twitter feed, at NetterMike. And you guys better be subscribed to my newsletter, Netter News, which is free for the moment till Gavin taxes free newsletters.
And we're expecting that in what, 3, 2, 1? I mean, this guy is insane. Absolutely insane. It's like a shell game happening before everybody's eyes, and it's been going on the entire time he's been balling around in politics. Mike, thank you so much. You'll also want to check out Outraged with Mike Netter and friends. Please do that as well. Follow Mike Netter on X.com and sign up for that newsletter and catch him here periodically on State of the Nation. Mike, we'll talk to you again next time. Thanks for everything you do.
I look forward to it. If I survive the Republican convention this weekend, I look forward to being back. We'll talk to you guys soon. It's up there in San Francisco. Everyone out there, remember, Rebuild California, listen to TNT, because we'll blow you up before the government does.
That's right. That is right. Thanks, Mike. All right. Stay tuned for the Jason Burmes Show coming up next here on Today's News Talk TNT.